Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to what could be actually the final podcast of the Rugby World Cup period for Talking Rugby Union. Myself and Chris are, well, we're over the phone again, Chris. It's, I'm trying to think, it must be the fifth time we've been over the phone for this podcast.
Yeah, it must be the fifth time, Joel. Sad times that the Rugby World Cup podcast is coming to an end after what seems to have been a very quick sort of 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Since we first recorded like the preview video and the first podcast. So, but it's all culminating in a final which England are involved in. So, got to be happy about that.
So, we're going to be talking a bit about the England team, kind of the standout players, stuff like that, South Africa team, Sale Sharks' involvement in the Rugby World Cup final, and I'll explain why. And then all the different teams' paths to the final, because we have quotes kind of for each of these topics. When talking about the England team, Chris has had a conversation with Jacob Ford, who, of course, is a certain George Ford's youngest brother, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
Because George is the middle child, because obviously Joe's the oldest, I believe.
Yes, he is. Yeah, Joe's the oldest. There's not much between them, though.
No.
I think Jacob's 4 years younger than George, I think.
Oh, right.
But yeah, they're very, very close, but it was great to speak to Jacob, very open about, you know, sort of how much work George has put into this World Cup campaign, but obviously that more to come on that later on.
Yeah, with South Africa, we've got some quotes from Joel Stransky, the man that kicked the winning drop goal in the 1995 Rugby World Cup final.
Great work, Joel. Great work. All the big names.
I'm a connected man. And then we are talking, when we're talking about Sale Sharks, we managed to get Rob Webber on the phone. Many thanks to Sam Diamond for sorting that one out.
As always
with Sale Sharks. Hopefully we'll get a Curry twin in the next few months. And then we're talking about past the final, and we're also going to kind of have a little bit of a throwback to 2007 when England fell short to South Africa in Paris, because there's a certain man that was on the bench that day for England wearing the number 16 jersey, and that was George Shooter, and that is someone that Chris has had to interview, I think, on a couple of occasions when working in the NCAA, of course, formerly the director of rugby at Hinckley. So let's get kind of right into it. The England team, Chris. It's the same team as the semi-finals, so it looks like Eddie Jones finally has a settled team.
Well, I think it's going to be settled, though, isn't it? If you go and put that sort of display in against the All Blacks, I think if Eddie had done his usual thing and maybe tweaking a few things, I think there'd be more question marks. But finally, this could be a team that Eddie sticks to, and obviously I think the main talking points before this game were whether Johnny May was going to be fit. I mean, he came off of, was it like 50 minutes or 55 minutes against New Zealand last Saturday, and then Carl Sinclair as well had carried a knock, I think, but he was past fit, so good news for those two. But yeah, I expected before the announcement, that England would stick with the same team, because you'd be mad not to after putting that sort of performance in against the All Blacks, and obviously Ben Spencer's on the bench after flying out last weekend.
Yes, of course, Ben Spencer, that was one of the big stories, wasn't it? Because there was a couple of injuries, or what looked like injuries, in that that game against New Zealand. And Ben Spencer must be absolutely loving life. He could win a World Cup having played maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think he played against Northampton on the opening day of the season in the Premiership, and he played really, really well, actually. And he would have been, I think, rewind back to when me and you, Joe, went down to Kensington when the sort of a provisional World Cup squad was announced, and there was a lot of talk like Ben wasn't in there and Willie Hines was in the squad, and it was a bit like, well, that's a bit weird, because, you know, Eddie Jones has gone with your Danny Kerrs, your Richard Wigglesworth, and Ben Spencer's been in the fold for sort of the last 12 months, but he would have been massively disappointed with that, no question about it. But he's obviously got his head down, focused on working hard for Saracens, and now his chance has come at the expense of Willie Hines, and no doubt he'll play some part in the World Cup final, and like you say, Joe's got a chance to win the World Cup, probably playing maybe 30, 35 minutes or so.
Well, do you know what I'm excited by? The fact that, obviously, Ben Spencer kicks his points as well for Saracens at times. So what that does mean now, that England have got another ball player to bring on the pitch, another footballer, if you will, to kind of control the kicking, whether it's from the base or from hand, he's more than capable. Of course, applied his trade at Cambridge before going to Saracens. I'm trying to think of this team. It's an excellent squad. I mean, we've got guys that can pill for the ball in Maratoje, Tom Curry, Sam Underhill, in that forward pack. It's just such a good squad overall.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. I mean, Josh Beaumont's just done his latest column for us, which is on the website. And one of the key things that Josh picked up on was the fact that, like you just said there, Joe, that England have come on so much in terms of their ability in both attack and defence, and attack especially, he said, and that's something that could cause South Africa a lot of problems on Saturday, if they can get that speed of the ball going and generating that momentum that we definitely saw against Australia and against New Zealand. And if they do that, South Africa could really, really struggle. But, you know, they've got so much creativity, and I think people, I definitely may, I'll hold my hands up to this, before the tournament we did that sort of live video, didn't we, Joe, on Twitter, sort of reacting to the England squad, and I said, you know, I'd like to see Slade to Alangi and then Farrell at 10, but I think sort of the creativity that George Foden has brought to the side along with Farrell, and if you do for your likes of Ben Spencer in there alongside Elliot Daly, etc., I think the creativity that England have is just phenomenal, and it's certainly the main weapon which sort of balances it out with the strong ball carriers that we've seen. You know, Carl Sigmund's been immense in definitely the knockout stage of this tournament. You've obviously Billy Vunipola, we know what he can do. Mauro Itoje as well. So England have a lot of strengths which South Africa are going to have to cope with on Saturday.
Yeah, and one of the things that England have done is kind of between the knockout stages and the pool stages, was give Mauro Itoje kind of the reins in the line-out, if you like. And the line-out's actually really gone really well, despite George Crewe's been sat on the bench. And that's allowed Courtney Laws to come on and kind of have that, a bit of that power game, because, of course, everyone knows that Courtney Laws can really chase down a knock-off, a knock-on, kick-off, sorry. I'll get there eventually. we all know Courtney Laws can chase a kick-off. There we go. Pretty effectively, and put the first receiver into hospital if need be. So you mentioned George Ford, that man there, the Leicester Tiger, the man that rescued Leicester Tigers last season. He's probably been one of the most impressive England players this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Carr said in the week, didn't he, that he's probably be England's best player at this World Cup. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to remember the last time he didn't particularly perform well for England, and I think you may have to look back to maybe last summer, potentially. And it's been, you know, it's been a sort of a tough period for him. He's great mates with Owen Farrell. They went to the same school. They trained for hours and hours when they were younger together. And for Ford, it's always been about competing with Farrell for the 10th shirt. And going into 2019, it looked as if Jones had gone away from the four foul axis, and it was more foul at 10, and then it was going to try and get Tuolangi in there alongside somebody else in the centres. But Ford has just stuck at it, and I think there was a bit of surprise when we were at the Highland game in the warm-ups where, you know, Ford and Farrell both played together, and I first-hand saw it live, didn't we, Joe, how well they can combine. Yeah. But he's been absolutely brilliant. His kicking's been fantastic, and his sort of him and Farrell have been able to dictate tempo in every single game they've played together. So there's no wonder Jones has kept the same team. A lot of people, Joe, would say, what about Ford defensively? But I think he's even shown in that respect he can front up to it. So he's really sort of brought his game on over the last 12 months, and he thoroughly deserves to be getting the plaudits now, just with a couple of days to go to the World Cup final.
And one man that knows how hard George Ford has worked is, of course, his brother, Jacob Ford, who was formerly of Loughborough and currently, he's the director of rugby at Westcliff?
Head coach at Westcliff took on the job in the summer. He's really, really loving it. But yeah, like you say, Joe, he's been, you know, following George's journey, and he was full of praise for his middle brother, if you like, going into this World Cup final.
Been in contact with him after the game. I spoke to him after the game, and spoke to him during the week this week. And you know, he's incredibly excited for the final. And you know, it just shocked me how grounded the England team are.
Yeah.
You know, he was saying, you know, they're only giving themselves an opportunity. They're not getting carried away. They've got a job to do. They haven't come here to finish second. You know, that kind of stuff. So it's great to hear that. You know, and then hopefully they'll bring the trophy home and stuff. And you know, it's great for all the squad, because obviously the sacrifices and commitment they've shown over the last 12 months has been second to none.
Yeah, I mean, how proud are you, Jacob, and how proud is your family? Because you said before, you know, it's such a family which is revolved around rugby. So how proud are you of sort of the work that George has put into this, and now he's reaping the rewards of being in the World Cup final?
Yeah, well, you know, incredibly proud. I mean, everyone said, oh, isn't he lucky? And I went, no, he's not, because I've seen him grow up since he was, you know, since we were running around in the garden, and the commitment he put into rugby was just, you know, phenomenal. The amount of times he'd spend on kicking, you know, kicking every day down at the local playing fields with me and my brother and stuff, and just the sacrifices he's made over the years, and you know, he's been through some tough periods, especially you know, tough year at Bath towards the end there.
Yeah.
And coming out the other side of those periods, you know, has made him a stronger, better person. And you know, you look at him in the World Cup final now, and you go, Jesus, you know, everything you've been through. There's, I can't think of anybody else who deserves to be there more. You know, I'm excited for him more than anything. You know, really excited for him. It's a fantastic opportunity. I mean, all three of us were there in 2007 in the final when my dad was the coach then. And it kind of feels like a bit of a repeat now, the other way around, and George played against South Africa. So it's funny how things happen, but yeah, no. You know, incredibly proud of him, for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned that hard work there, Jacob, which is quite a good thing to pick up on, because I know people have said sort of the last 12 months or so, George is maybe in the shadow of Owen because of that 10th shirt. But I think after South Africa last summer, George put in so much hard work, and you're now seeing 2019 has been such a great year for him. So that just probably is testament to the work he has put in, especially over the last 12 months.
Yeah, it is. I mean, individually, he's come on such a long way in the last year. I mean, he's, obviously, things haven't been good at Leicester Tigers. He's been carrying a lot of the weight down there, and a lot of the responsibility. You know, he takes responsibility for a lot of things that are happening there when he probably shouldn't do. But he's having that as a distraction. But then, you know, to focus on his own game. And even though Leicester were losing last year, some of the performances he were putting in was, you know, very special for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I was coaching at Loughborough last year, and he was there pretty much every week doing sprint training on his own. You know, doing everything possible in every area to, you know, to be the best version of himself he could be, and get himself the best prepared he could be in the mindset for this World Cup and physically. And I mean, you know, a lot of people don't really see that work that he's put in and stuff. Mm. So for me to see it, and now him being there, it's kind of paying off a little bit.
Yeah, and is it a testament to his character as well, Jacob? Because obviously it would have been massively frustrating for him to miss out of that Australia game, but to put in that performance he did last weekend against New Zealand, is that just him showing he always puts the team first before his own performance?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I spoke to him after the Australia week, and I said, geez, you know, you must be disappointed, you know, that you're not playing at the weekend. And he said, oh, no, I'm not. I said, I've just got a different role this week, and I've got to do that role the best I possibly can.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Like, you know, if I dropped a player at Westcliff, I wouldn't get that response. And, you know, he came off the bench, and I thought, wow, he's done everything possible in that 10 minutes he got to put himself in the frame for the following week. And it just shows if you keep your feet on the floor, you keep your head down, you work hard, and you have a different role some weeks, it does pay dividends in the end. And, you know, just a testament to his character, like you said.
Yeah, many thanks to Jacob for his time, of course. You know, a man very much involved with the rugby still, having just left Loughborough. Chris, it seemed like he was obviously, probably quite naturally, full of praise for his brother.
Yeah, you know, it was really, really interesting to sort of hear his views about how hard George has worked. And, you know, I asked him a couple of times, you know, it's a testament to his character. And I think Jacob agreed, you know, the work George has put in, and it's been phenomenal. People, you know, we've heard interviews in the past that he lives and breathes rugby, but, you know, listening to Jacob, it really does seem that way. It's a family which is massively involved in rugby. As Jacob said there, they were all three of the brothers were there in 2007 watching the World Cup final when their dad was a coach at England. So it's a nice sort of roles reversed it. His dad's flying out there. His mum's already out there with George's fiance, I believe, that his dad's going to be flying out there for the final. And Jacob and Joe will be here doing their jobs for the domestic sides. But, you know, he'll be full of support. They'll be crammed into Westcliff Rugby Club on Saturday morning and watching the final. And I think a few of the people who have texted me at the club have said Jacob was, you know, on the edge last week when they were playing New Zealand, and I'm sure he'd be on the edge again on Saturday morning.
Yeah, of course. And as much as myself and Chris do enjoy talking about England, it's time to move on to South Africa. I think similarly to England, there is only very few changes in this team, and the only change that really stands out to me is that Cheslin Kolbe is fit and has taken his place back in that 14 shirt.
Yeah, we were at Rugby X on Tuesday, weren't we, Joe? Mm. And we were walking down the escalator, and you said, bad news, Colby's fit to play. And, you know, he is there. You know, he has real, real quality. I think the first time I'd really sort of noticed him was last year in the European Champions Cup. I think they were playing Bath. I think Toulouse were playing Bath.
Oh, was that when Freddie Burns had that horror show?
Yeah, it was the Freddie Burns when he... you know, dropped the ball over the try line. But Colby just was absolutely electric that day. I think he may have scored two, I'm not sure, but he was absolutely brilliant. So massive boost for South Africa. But we know, we always talk about the power game, the physicality, but this man can cause England a lot of problems if they sort of find that creative spark in Africa. So a big boost for the Springboks going into Saturday.
Now, where I always tend to look is the pack first and then kind of talk about the backs later. So it's kind of a bit weird starting by talking about a winger for me. One of the key places, of course, at any time is the back row. Obviously, we talked about Tom Curry and Sam Underhill. Obviously, very young players. In contrast to South Africa's Siya Kolisi and Peter Steph Du Toit, I think the England options are better. Or is that me just being biased?
Nah, the Kamikaze kids. Yeah. Eddie Jones, I think, you know, they're unbelievable. I think they've shown in the last couple of games that, you know, they played, you know, against two of the best in the world, or two of the long-standing ones, Hooper and Pocock, didn't they? And they were absolutely brilliant in that game. And they showed exactly that against the reigning world champions last weekend. Exactly. They're more than capable of stepping up to this world stage. Mm. It still beggars belief that Tom Curry is 21 years old.
My age, yeah.
Yeah, your age, Joe, yeah. And Sam Underhill's 22 years older than you. And, you know, these two guys could easily be the future for England. And I think between them, they sort of harness that sort of future aspect for England. So, you know, we've seen them performing against Australia and New Zealand. So I don't hold any fears for them going into that battle on Saturday with the South African back row. We know their experience may count for a lot. They've been in these big game situations before. You know, Curry and Underhill probably haven't experienced anything like this before. So that's where they probably have the upper hand. But in terms of the performances we've seen from Curry and Underhill, I think they've got to be shading that one, Joe.
Well, this is the thing, obviously. So on the bench for South Africa, Francois Lowe is wearing that number 21 shirt because of the 6-2 split that South Africa have on the bench in terms of forwards and backs. I would be playing Francois Lowe over Siya Kolisi.
Really?
I don't think Kolisi's had a great tournament.
No, but I mean, you know, he's a big statement, wouldn't it, for him to drop the captain in a final?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have probably played in the last two games, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know Francois Lowe's quality, and this is the thing with South Africa, I think. But with Kolisi, I think it's sort of since Massey Erasmus came in, because he came in before, if I'm right in saying, before the England tour there last summer, was it? I think that was sort of his first
summer. Yeah, that was his first summer tour, yeah.
And it was sort of the introduction of Kolisi as well, wasn't it, as captain? So I think that's sort of gone hand in hand with the reign and sort of the progression of this South African rugby team, I think, Joe. I think with Kolisi there and Rassie Erasmus there, they've had a brilliant sort of progression over the last sort of 12 to 16 months or so, you know. They've quite, you know, they played actually really well against England in the autumn internationals last year. And they've obviously had a fantastic rugby championship leading into this World Cup. So I think what he wouldn't want to do is now upset something that has seen the side go on an upward trajectory, if you like. I understand exactly what you mean, that Francois Lowe has probably had a better impact in this World Cup for South Africa. But I think from a coach's point of view, I can totally understand why he's captain in the squad, because he's been there since day one.
One clear place, in my opinion, that South Africa do have the advantage is it scrum half?
I knew you were going to say that. I think the love for Faf on this podcast is growing.
Sell Sharks, mate. We love Sell Sharks. Thank you, Sell Sharks.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, as much as Ben Youngs is, you know, an established international as well. You know, as he's on the nearing 90 caps now, we know his quality. But Faf de Klerk's just going on leaps and leaps and bounds, isn't he? I think, you know, when he first started to sail, they weren't too sure of his qualities, but I think he's just stepped up to every challenge he's faced, and he's obviously one of Sale's key players. You know, Steve Diamond rates him highly, and to now be the number one choice scrum half ahead of Cobus Reineck, who was arguably one of the best in the Premiership last year, shows exactly the talent Faf's had. And I think he's had a decent World Cup, Joe. I mean, he's kicked quite a lot. Yeah. I don't think he does that as much as he would for Sale, but him and Pollard have just got the jobs done efficiently, and like you said, they work well, very well in tandem, and De Klerk's probably got the edge over Youngs. So that's going to be quite an interesting battle, I think. I think De Klerk will be fancying his chances against Youngs, definitely.
Other than that, I think the South Africa team's pretty standard. Mpimpi, similarly to Colby, is just a bit of a live wire, kind of will break the game line if he gets given that opportunity. The centres, Damien Diallende, been brilliant this World Cup. Scored a great try against Wales last week.
I was going to say, that battle drill was going to be interesting, isn't it?
I tweeted about it earlier, actually. I'm very excited for it. Yeah. No, I'm very excited because, obviously, I think where South Africa will maybe try to get the advantages in that defence, so when they're defending, just get in England's face, get the ball, kind of make them uncomfortable. And the thing is, if you've got a 12 like Damien Diallende, who is not scared to throw his body into things, Owen Farrell, that could be very uncomfortable if Owen Farrell has maybe 2 seconds takes 2 seconds too long with the ball in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sort of scrum halves we just talked about, Joe, they'll be able to try and bring these guys into the game, and they will have to dictate, I know it sounds quite obvious, they'll have to dictate the tempo, and Youngs and De Klerk are very, very capable of that. And if England do that, it's going to be a fantastic battle between, you know, your two Alangis and your Farrells and your Diallende, so cannot wait for that one.
Yeah, and kind of finally, when talking about South Africa, before we introduced the interview with Joel Strensky, neither side has a fullback, so that's always nice.
Very true.
Elliot Daly versus Willie LaRue. Willie LaRue, who is having the Mickey taken out of him by school kids. I'll try and find that video for you, Chris. And Elliot Daly, who we're not sure can catch a high ball still, so we'll see how that goes on Saturday morning. Other than that, the benches are pretty standard, I'd say, Chris. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I've got one of the mates who's, you know, big rugby fan, and he's been calling for Jack Noll to be on the bench for the last couple of weeks.
Jack,
he's
Noll.
Not on there again. He's not there again, and it's obviously Slade and Joseph sort of on the bench for England. And if, you know, Johnny May does have to come off, you know, you've got your likes of Henry Slade coming on, potentially on the wing. So, I think the only thing I think stands out is Jack Noll's not involved. He's obviously not fit enough.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I can't. I think, you know, he did play, didn't he? Was it against Argentina or
it was against
USA?
USA. It's got a try.
He did, yeah. So he's obviously not recovered from that as well as maybe the England's coaching staff and Jones would have hoped for. But I think that's probably the only one where you would like to see probably an out and out winger on the bench instead of maybe one of Joseph or Slade. But I think Eddie Jones has got his reasons for leaving Noel out.
And can you name the only World Cup winner in these two sides?
Oh, that's going to test my launch. Vermeulen?
Frans Steen.
Frans Steen, of course, yeah.
He was 20 or 22 or something like that when he won the World Cup in 2007 when he was playing in Paris. And I was given the opportunity actually to talk to a man that knows a little thing about winning World Cups and particularly slotting World Cup final drop goals. And that was a certain Joel Stransky.
Yes, I think probably the best way to describe it is if we went back 18 months ago and we said, you know, in 18 months' time, South Africa will play in the Rugby World Cup final. Mm-hmm. We would have been absolutely delighted, you know. So I think what Rossie Erasmus has done in the build-up and through the tournament, he's built a good culture in the team. He's got a great team spirit. He's got a talented bunch of players, but he's built a game plan that is designed primarily around statistics, around how the laws are blown, and most importantly around doing the basics really, really well. And it's a great recipe, but it's not a pretty recipe. You know? And for us, it's certainly worked. We are very big, very strong, very powerful. We're really good in the set phases. We're good in the tight loose. We're not good in the loose. When the game gets loose, we're not good. And we have a very strong... We kick a lot. I'm not always sure it's a strong kicking game. But it's a recipe that works come pressure times, come Rugby World Cups. And it's certainly a recipe that's worked for us coming off a low base. You know, so what we do sensationally well, but I mean, the reality is we don't do a whole lot.
I mean, yeah, I mean, do you think that's kind of the way the game's going now with, you know, I mean, we're nearly at 25 years professional of the sport, and do you feel like that's maybe the natural progression, or do you think that rugby still has that chance to be flowing and kind of like it was when you were playing in the mid-90s?
Well, I think we've seen some teams play flowing pretty beautiful rugby, and to be fair, England last weekend were sensational against the All Blacks, so it definitely has the ability, but I do think the powers that be need to consider a couple of tweaks in the law to change things up a little bit.
And you've been out in Japan for the whole tournament, is that right?
Yeah.
How have you enjoyed seeing all the different teams and kind of seeing how the local fans have engaged with the big teams and stuff like that?
So I think the tournament's been sensational. I think it's been wonderful watching all the teams, watching different styles of play, watching, you know, from the dull kicking games of Japan, of South Africa and Wales, to the more composed games of England and New Zealand, to the fast running games of the smaller teams like Japan and Fiji and the way they've gone about things. The whole tournament has been an incredible spectacle, and I think it's been well embraced by Japan and the Japanese people. The culture here is amazing, so to spend a long time in this country has been fantastic. I think it's a great. It's altogether been a tournament that has been absolutely wonderful. You know, there's very little we can criticise about it, and hopefully the final delivers a sensational final.
Yeah, of course, and obviously South Africa's opposition is England, and you've talked about them as a team that's played some really good flowing rugby. What areas can South Africa potentially attack in that England team to hopefully get an advantage and lift the Webb Ellis on Saturday?
So I think what England haven't come up against yet during the tournament and for the last few months is a very aggressive, big, powerful defensive structure, and that's what we'll offer and what we'll attack. It means England won't get easy front football. I mean, I think they're good enough to find a way to deliver good, quick front football, but they'll have to be as good, if not even a little bit better than they were against the All Blacks. We won't give them, you know, that front football as easily as they got it against New Zealand. And I think if we can knock them backwards defensively and stop them playing quickly like they did against the All Blacks, stop them playing in those one or two channels where they caught the All Blacks a little bit unawares, I think England will not necessarily struggle, but they'll find it more difficult to break down defences. And I think that they too will resort to a little bit more kicking, which is... Yes, to be fair to them, they have all those you know strings on their armory. It's they're a polished team. They've got strength. They've got power up front. They've got, you know, power in the midfield, and they've got great decision makers and executors in the back between Farrell and Ford and Youngs. You know, so they look. They're a complete team. They offer a strong package. But I'm not sure they've been put under huge physical pressure just yet.
Yeah, you talk about huge physical pressure, and obviously during the tournament, Razzy Erasmus has switched to having six forwards on the bench. How much has that helped South Africa in the later stages of the tournament? Because you know, bringing on that power game must be massively beneficial for the backs, knowing that the forwards are going to get such dominance.
So I think it has helped, but I mean the other side of that is that I'm not sure we've been tested in different ways just yet. You know, Wales tested us physically and they hung on and they were brave and gallant, and they almost found a way to win a game which they shouldn't have. Japan tested us for 40 minutes by moving the ball around, but the reality is if we are under pressure and England get ahead with a 6-2 bench, I think we might struggle to chase the game. So it has a disadvantage, but where it has a massive advantage is as Russi says, as everyone says, you know, what South Africa do, they do really, really well. And our physical game is strong, it's powerful. And with those fresh legs, with bringing on almost a whole new pack of forwards, it does give you the ability to keep that pressure up, to keep that physical dominance up for the full 80 minutes. There's no slacking off, you know. So when you play against the Springboks, you have to absorb that pressure for the full 80, and you've got to find a way to win it, which... I'm not sure England have been that tested just yet.
Well, to be fair, that is one of the main conversations going on in the UK. It doesn't feel like England maybe are worth it in comparison to teams like South Africa that won the Rugby Championship this year.
Well, so, I mean, the Rugby Championship is also, it's a little bit of a misnomer because teams sent different teams to different areas. They didn't necessarily play the strongest team every week. It was very much a matter of testing combinations and saving legs and wanting to, you know, not damage self-belief and and composure. So, I mean, it as much as South Africa won the championship, I'm not always sure that the fact that you won it actually counts for anything. It's definitely a show of a bit of form and doing the basics well, and it's a show of having a squad that goes deep. But it's not necessarily a show of strength versus strength in a World Cup final that you'll be dominant as you were at times during the championship.
And if all things go well for the Box on Saturday, well, it'll be Saturday evening for you. What would that mean for the country that seems to be kind of from the outside looking in, struggling a bit with its rugby identity, with attendances not looking great at ground sometimes?
So I think for us probably what it would mean is even greater than a rugby reward. I think the problem we have in our game in South Africa is a problem that we see in the game of rugby worldwide. I think the game is a little predictable. It can be boring at times. There's a lot of kicking. Statistically, teams who kick the ball away and who have less of the ball are winning the games. I think rugby as a whole needs a little revamp. But for us in South Africa, it'll certainly help grow the game. It'll certainly show a united front from a rugby perspective. But even more so, we're a nation that has issues at the moment. We have rising crime. We have political issues. We have all our parastate bills are failing. We have load shedding. We have our infrastructure is collapsing a little bit. We have a little bit of a lack of almost belief in our government and our structures. This would be massive for us as a country to bring people together again, to create unity, to give us confidence, to give us hope, and to give us a sense of self-belief. It would be enormous for our country to have our first black captain hold up the Webb Ellis Trophy and raise the Rugby World Cup would just be enormous for the game and for us as a nation.
Yeah, because one of the great unifying moments that I think it stands out in a lot of people's memories and probably yours quite well as well is 1995, kind of that feeling, because obviously I wasn't alive at the time, but obviously I've seen Invictus and things like that, which is obviously a portrayal of what happened in 1995. Has the country ever been as unified as it was maybe that day?
So I think on that day, and maybe for about a year and a half afterwards, it was unified. You know, Nelson Mandela was the glue and the bond that brought us together and took us through a period of uncertainty. And we won the Rugby World Cup, we won the African Cup of Nations. It was a period where sport played a major role in unifying a nation. But since, you know, after his handing over of the presidency, we've slowly deteriorated. We've had 9 years of Jacob Zuma, which was catastrophic for us. And now we are trying to rebuild. So this is, whether it's ever been better or it's ever been worse, it's almost immaterial to us right now. What is material is that this could be another foundation on which we can build, that we can grow, and that we can come together.
So that was Joe speaking to Joel there. I mean, Joe, that was quite a fascinating interview. I mean, when you said you were going to speak to him, we thought obviously it's going to be big chat about sort of the 1995 final, the experience of that, and then moving into this new age of South African rugby. But to talk about sort of comparing the two teams, but in the sense of the history of the country and how much it can bring the country together if the Springboks are successful on Saturday, was quite a refreshing and more interesting angle, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think as people probably tell from listening to the interview that I wasn't really expecting the interview to take that kind of a turn. I don't usually kind of delve into the kind of social and the politics of things usually, but it was definitely enlightening to hear someone that is obviously Joel has a business in South Africa, and he runs, you know, that's how he earns his living. He can't, you know, rugby wasn't professional when he started out playing, so he's always had to find a way to earn a living outside of it. And, you know, as a businessman that he is, he obviously understands more greatly than me how the country's doing. And obviously I've never been to South Africa, and I don't know if there ever will be plans to. But yeah, it was enlightening for him to be kind of drawing contrasts between 1995 and today. It was a bit shocking in a way.
Yeah, and that's what when I was reading it, that's what I thought. It is quite mad to think, you know, South Africa has come on so much since that sort of historic game in 1995. But it is very interesting to see that how much sport can have an effect on people. Because sort of maybe here we take it for granted that, you know, with some of the, like, for instance, the cricket team, they're really successful, but that's just everyone celebrates it and moves on with life. Whereas if South Africa are able to get the job done on Saturday, that will probably have a massive impact, not just on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. It will probably be a broader sort of impact it has across the country. I think it's going to be an interesting one if you're a Sale Sharks player or a fan, yeah. But having 2 feet and having 1 foot in each camp rather.
Well, but I hope the pure Sale Sharks fans still want England to win.
but, Josh Beaumont certainly does.
Oh, of course he does. I don't have any issues with him wanting that either, because obviously what we know is Tom Curry is in the England team, and he's not registered officially as a Sale Sharks player yet, but Mark Wilson is also in that England team. In the South Africa team, is it just Ludwig Diaga and Faf that are at
Sale? Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So there's a 2v2 there in Sale.
Yeah, well, they're going to have a World Cup winner. Well, we're going to have 2 World Cup winners, aren't we? Regardless of what happens. So, yeah, no, it was interesting, you know, speaking to Josh, and he said it always massively great for the club. You know, you've got these players who are playing in a World Cup final and four of them are going to be coming back to Sale regardless of the outcome on Saturday, and it's going to be great for them to bolster what is already a very talented squad, which you like to Faf coming back in, Mark Wilson coming back, and obviously Tom Curry as well. But you also said it was great for the commercial side of things as well. to have four players in there, and obviously we've seen this week sort of the great social media activity Sale have been doing, obviously with sending Ben to Japan, the start of the tournament. They've really been keen to push how many internationals they've got at this World Cup, because they're a growing squad, and exciting times ahead for Sale, definitely.
And I spoke to one man that's pretty involved with Sale Sharks in Rob Webber, the hooker that has played for Wasps England and I think Blackheath at one stage as well, actually. So I got to speak to Rob. This is when I was at Rugby X, by the way, so for anyone wondering why there is background noise, that is actually the reason. I wasn't in a pub.
Now, Sale Sharks are going to be without Ben Curry this weekend, because Ben's somehow won a competition, essentially, to go to Japan to watch his brother play in the final. It must be great for the club to be able to do something like that for Ben, to see his brother play in what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, look, it's... I'm not really sure how it came about, to be honest. Whether it was Ben himself or the club or whatever, but you know, it's always going to be really nice for him and his family, and for Tom to have his twin brother there. So, you know, I think there's a couple of other lads wishing they could go as well, I think, but we haven't got brothers playing, so. But I think, look, it's good, it's brilliant for Ben, and when he articulates it about the bond he has with his twin brother, you can kind of understand it a bit more. So I think it's great that the club has, allowed him, has given him that, afforded him that opportunity to be able to do it. And, I know he's very grateful to Steve for letting him do that. So hopefully everyone's happy, so to speak.
And now the thing is, regardless of what happens on Saturday morning, there's going to be at least one Rugby World Cup winner at Sale Sharks come 2 weeks later, or whatever it will be when everyone comes back in from international duty to do some training. So it must be pretty exciting that the club's going to have at least one winner of the World Cup.
It's brilliant. Look, I think if you said to 3 or 4 years ago that Sale would have, I think it's actually 4 people playing in the game, with Lou Diego, Faf, Tom, and then Mark Wilson now joining us, playing in the World Cup final for their respective teams, it probably wouldn't have been that much of a realistic statement. But I think, now with with the way the club's trying to build and build a squad of high quality, hopefully that's going to be something that realises itself more and more.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, I hate to bring it up, Rob, but 4 years ago things were a bit contrasting in English rugby, and it must be... You obviously probably are delighted that England have got to the final, but is there that element of, I wish it was 4 years ago instead of now?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely, look, I think when I played in the 2015 one, goes without saying, we wish we'd have done better. I mean, we didn't get it right, and we paid the price. So, you know, if you actually look at those games, it was, we were beat narrowly by Wales, and then Australia pulled away, so, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wish we could have done a lot of things differently, but we didn't. But from my point of view, there's no... You know, our ship has sort of sailed for me, really. So I'm just delighted for the lads. I watched the game against New Zealand with the rest of the lads as a fan, and I thought it was a fantastic performance. So I'm really happy for them. They hopefully can go on and win it, and perhaps there can be a bit of a change in the guard of English rugby legends, and it'll be fantastic for the game.
But yeah, we're going to kind of just finally kind of talk about 2007, that 2007 World Cup final between England and South Africa. Unfortunately, it wasn't England's day that day. I don't know what memories you have of that final, Chris.
Very, very blurred, Joe. What one of the key things is that England went into that tournament 4 years on after such that, you know, the highs of Johnny Wilkinson, etc. They went into the tournament in a pretty bad place. In terms of the squad, they didn't have many expectations of how far they could go as the defending world champions. And they got absolutely hammered by South Africa in the pool stages. I think it was 36, was it? Or 33-0, I can't remember.
No.
But everyone was questioning sort of where England go from there. Somehow they managed to sort of pick themselves up to beat Australia against the odds and then knock out the host, France. And to get to the final against South Africa, who were at the time the best number one ranked side in the world. So, that's sort of what I picked up from the sort of research that I've done. That it was a pretty tight final, but that Mark Waito decision still gets talked about today. And I think, you know, I think that's Waito had quite a very successful career at Sale in this country. But one of the main reasons he'll be remembered for the try that never was.
Chris, you got on the blower to someone, didn't you?
Yes, we got in touch with George Tutu, who was on the bench that day, as you said at the top, Joe. He was on the bench, came on after sort of 50 minutes, I think, played in that final, and, you know, he just discussed sort of their journey going through from the pool stages, sort of the team they had, and he also chatted about sort of the influence that he can see Eddie Jones had on this England side, because George's was a coach at Hinckley very recently. He's still involved with coaching of the England women's side at the moment as well, so it was good to hear his sort of views on how Eddie Jones has got this side prepared for this World Cup final, and also what it's like for a player in the lead up to a World Cup final. So next up is my chat with George.
Yeah, it was quite strange. I mean, we probably more expensive than we deserve to be after the first couple of rounds of the pool fixtures. We started a run and actually we had a really bit of spirit about us for the second half of the tournament. And found ourselves in the final, having beaten Australia and then the French in the semi final. So I guess it was a little bit like just happy to be there in a way. Very unexpected, certainly given where we'd started and actually where we'd been for about 12, 18 months before, and we weren't a very good team for that period. So to sort of wind up and find ourselves in a World Cup final was quite sort of odd, quite unusual, difficult to take in at the time, I guess, because it wasn't something that had been on our radar. We hadn't been like the 2003 team who were solely focused on, you know, that one event. We'd taken every week as it comes, and we'd sort of just said, go out there, let's go out there and give it a crack and see what happens. And for sort of 3 or 4 weeks on the bounce, it bounced our way. And it was quite difficult to really, I mean, I probably feel better about it now, actually, but at the time it was quite difficult to get my head around it. The fact that we were in a World Cup final, and looking back, as I say, looking back with a bit of perspective, it was a fantastic time, a real sort of highlight of my career, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, George, because it was such a tight affair in the final when you guys played South Africa. So was it the fact that you guys thought, you know, you were sort of exceeded expectations that might have had an effect on the result going in South Africa's way?
Yeah, Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think you know, South Africa have been preparing for that game for 4 years. So, you know, they were the number one team in the world. They were the best team in the tournament at the time. And I think, you know, our attitude was the same from the quarterfinal and the semi-final. Just go out there, we'll play the game we're going to play. We're a little bit limited. We knew South Africa were heavy favourites. And I mean, I'd probably be lying to say that I think we expected to win. I think guys thought we had a chance as a knockout game. But I think when push comes to shove, we knew South Africa was a better team. And, it was a bit of a cage game, as most finals are. If that Kwaito try had been allowed, and if Victor Matfield hadn't come from nowhere, tackled Matt Tate under the posts, the game could have been different, but it wasn't. And I think I'd point, for the sake of rugby, probably the best team won on the night.
Yeah, so are we saying it's a try or not a try for Mark? Because I've seen this week, he keeps saying it's a try.
Well, I mean, if you speak to Frank, we heard him down for lunch not so long ago, he's had him when he was right. 12 years later. Well, I mean, yeah, the technology's changed. I must say, I've not seen that replay for a long time. But I think at the time it was 50-50, and that's enough doubt for me. I guess it probably shouldn't have been awarded. It's probably the right decision, as bitter a pill as that was at the time.
Yeah, and just on to this current side now, George, if you don't mind, 12 years on and they find themselves in another World Cup final. I mean, what have you sort of made of this transition over the last 4 years from Eddie Jones taking over the job to where he has got the side to today?
Yeah, well, I think it's been fantastic. The Eddie Jones roller coaster has been fascinating to look at from the outside. You know, he took over a team after the 2015 World Cup that was pretty low. In terms of morale and sort of mentality and all that, and straight away he had a massive impact, and then he ends up going on an unbeaten run of 18 games, including a three-match whitewash in Australia. So yeah, that was a hell of a start to a coaching career, and I guess would always be very difficult to sort of keep that up. But then, you know, wins a Grand Slam, loses a Grand Slam Messiah of the year later, and in the first 2 years you've done pretty much everything you could do in the game by winning the World Cup. So I guess the next 18 months was a bit of a plateau and a bit of a fall from grace in some respects. And I think all along, in all fairness to Eddie Jones, he's very Marmite. People like him, people don't like him. There's not right in between. He's always said to people, look, I'm building for a World Cup, I'm judging the World Cup, and he's stuck to his word, stuck to his guns, and he's got a team now that's playing as well as any England team has ever played.
Right, many thanks to George for giving some of his time today, because England women are actually in camp as of today, I believe. So, Chris, obviously World Cup final on Saturday. It is,
yes.
Razzie Erasmus versus Eddie Jones in the coaching boxes.
Yes.
Eddie Jones, of course, involved with South Africa in 2007.
Uh-huh.
But if Eddie Jones was to win the World Cup with England as head coach on Saturday morning, he would become the first ever head coach that was not from the nation that he was representing to win the Webb Ellis.
Wow. That is star, isn't it?
Good, isn't it?
That is a start. Well, they could have done it in 2003, but, you know, Johnny had other ideas.
Well, yeah. The thing is, I don't think that England team was ever going to lose it.
No, they're all geared up for that, aren't they? Mm. That was all the planning for that one. Yeah. But no, that's it. That is a good start. I fully expect. I'm not going to tempt fate.
No, of course. So we kind of... Yeah, that was kind of all for today's Talking Rugby Union podcast. You can follow Chris at @C_Heel on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow myself at JoeHarvey34 on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. And you can follow Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram. And then it's just type in Talking Rugby Union to Facebook, and we usually kind of are the top one to pop up. That's kind of it for this podcast. Might be the end of the whole Rugby World Cup podcast series, unless we decide to do one early next week. We are planning to shoot another video like we did at the start of the tournament to kind of discuss what we thought of the tournament in Japan and, you know, what we thought of the final, probably.
Yeah, but now we're getting some plans in place, because obviously the World Cup's over, but we want to do some sort of content after it to reflect on what's been such an historic but also such a great tournament for Japan as a whole. So, getting a few plans in place, but the Rugby World Cup coverage won't just stop at the final whistle on Saturday, especially in England.
Yeah. great stuff. And I've just seen on Twitter, Blaine Scully's following me. Lovely.
What a way to finish.
Oh, mate, what a day. What a day. So, yeah, thank you very much for listening to this Talking Rugby Union podcast, and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.